ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachina Bhari. Text number 7. Prihat Palam Mano Vidyat Ubhayendriya Nayakam Panchalah Pancha Vishaya Yan Madhye Navakam Puram. Translation: the 11th attendant, who is the commander of the others, is known as the mind. He is the leader of the senses, both in the acquisition of knowledge and in the performance of work. The Panchala kingdom is that atmosphere in which the five sense objects are enjoyed. Within that Panchala kingdom is the city of the body, which has nine gates, purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The mind is the center of all activities and is described here as Prihat Bala, very powerful. To get out of the clutches of Maya, material existence, one has to control the mind. One has to control his mind. According to training, the mind is the friend and the enemy of the living entity. If one gets a good manager, his estate is very nicely managed. But if the manager is a thief, his estate is spoiled. Similarly, in his material conditional existence, the living entity gives power of attorney to his mind. As such, he is liable to be misdirected by his mind into enjoying sense objects. Srila Ambarish Maharaj, therefore, first engaged his mind upon the lotus feet of the Lord, Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo. When the mind is engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, the senses are controlled. This system of control is called Yama, and this means subduing the senses. One who can subdue the senses is called a Goswami, but one who cannot control the mind is called Godasa. The mind directs the activities of the senses, which are expressed through different outlets as described in the next verse. In the Bhagavad Gita, this analogy of the city of nine gates is described as Kshetra in the 13th chapter. Second verse, Krishna says, Arjuna asks, what is Kshetra? And what is Kshetragya? And Kshetra in Sanskrit means field, like a field for farming, growing grains, corn, vegetables, a field, Kshetra. There is also that famous name Kurukshetra, the field of Kuru, where the battle of Mahabharata war was fought 5,000 years ago. Kshetra, a field. So Krishna says this body is the Kshetra, is the field of work in which the living entity works. This kshetra is his body. Now the body, part and parcel of the body are its senses. So these senses are the five knowledge acquiring senses and the five working senses, plus the mind. All of these 11 are the senses which are part of the field. In other words, all the senses in every single body are not the same. Every single body is not the same, and all the senses within each of these bodies is not the same. So these senses, they condition the living entity, just like a field limits how far, how much you can work in that area, that farm. It limits what you can do, how far you can go. So this body is the limit of our activities. Now this body itself is situated, is described in this verse, in the Panchala kingdom. So this Panchala kingdom is this atmosphere in which our body moves. This atmosphere is not so much the geographical location in which we are situated, but the modes of nature in which we work, in which the body moves, in which the senses are working. The facility that is provided by material nature, that is the Panchala kingdom. Just like if there was a kingdom and there was a city within that kingdom, which is the body. Similarly, we, the living entity, are situated in the body which moves within the three modes of material nature, of goodness, passion and ignorance. So all of this is very conditioning, limiting what we can do, what we cannot do. We are not free to do anything and everything. Just like we are walking in Vrindavan. So we're going from one building to another, and in between there are monkeys who are also in that same street. And while we're walking, there are also ants on the ground. So apparently, geographically, we're all sharing the same location. But every living entity's experience of the same place is different. It is different for the ant, it is different for the monkey, for the tree that's there, and for you who's going from one building to another. It is not the same experience for the ant as it is for you. Likewise, even if two humans are walking in the same vicinity, it's a different world they live in. Each one lives in a different world according to his senses that he has acquired. Their limitations, their quality, the three modes of nature under which they act. So Narada Muni is explaining very clearly his analogy to King Prachinabhari. He is educating him. We are being educated. We are being enlightened. What is the actual reality? We have our own idea of this reality, but there is a actual true explanation as well, not just subjective, not just what we think it may be. So Narada Muni is telling Prachinabari that actually this facility that you have, this human body, its perfection is not just to get into a different situation with more facility for sense enjoyment. Do you understand? See, King Prachinabari, he was engaged in performing sacrifice so that his next situation, his next life will be a better one. Better one for his senses, for his body. Narada Muni is explaining that even if the ant became a human, he is still working in this Panchala kingdom, the kingdom where there are sense objects. You're not going to go to a kingdom which is not dictated, which does not dictate your senses by the sense objects. You're going to go to another situation in which your senses will be impelled, attracted towards different sense objects. So that dynamic, that situation is the problem. Yahi sansparshaja bhoga dukkha yonaya evate. This dynamic of the senses enjoying the sense objects is the source of misery. This is the point which King Prachinabari is not understanding. Shishi Gornitaya, Shishi Krishna Balaram, Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. So to waste our life for a different situation in which again we are conditioned by the sense objects is a mistake. This is the point. If you remain in the Panchala kingdom, that kingdom in which your senses are forever seeking sense objects, you will be in a state of misery. Dukkha yonaya evate. So the intelligent person, he does not waste his time, his energy, to continue that same circle of suffering. He tries to get out of that circle, that cycle, altogether. So that Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport. That's dependent upon the use of the mind. The mind, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, is either the best of friends or the worst of enemies. If it is controlled, it is the best of friends. If it is uncontrolled, it is the worst enemy. Uncontrolled means that whatever object of the senses comes before you, you become attracted. That's uncontrolled. Your mind is an enemy. Now, the other point is that you cannot actually be senseless. You do have a mind. You do have senses. You cannot, though you may try, to avoid coming under the influence of sense objects, you will be forced to eventually, because we are sentient beings. We possess senses. They must do something. You cannot do nothing. So without a higher engagement, we will again fall back into this situation of being attracted by our sense objects. So the alternative is Savai Mana Krishna Padaravindayo. This is the alternative. Krishna is not a sense object like material objects. He is completely different. And just like the mind meditates on sense objects, if it wants, it can meditate on Krishna's lotus feet. This is the point. Now, Prabhupada uses an interesting word here. According to training, it depends on the training. You cannot fix your mind on Krishna's lotus feet if there is no training. You can't just switch. We have a long history of being attracted to sense objects. So there has to be a switch over. You have to go from this situation to a different one. And that switch over requires some effort, some training, some practice, so that we are habituated with a new habit of thinking of Krishna's lotus feet. Now, this is not our history. Our history is meditating on all the various objects of the senses. Just like, you know, even in children we see when they become teenagers, and this is kind of universal, whether it's in India, in Africa, in America, they will have pictures, posters of either celebrities, cars, houses, dolls, something that attracts them. So that's our starting point. We already have within our mind invested many objects of desire. Dhyayato vishyan pungsa. We have attachment for these desires. They're not just, we cannot easily dismiss them. We have invested our heart, our soul into these desires. We actually look forward to that day, that opportunity, when I might enjoy them, when I might acquire them, when I might be the Lord of all these wonderful things. This is our situation. So that has to be changed through training. Now we hear that Ambarish Maharaj, he used to use his mind to think of Krishna's lotus feet. But that's because he was trained to do that. He had trained himself. Even though he was the king, he wasn't thinking of all the objects of desire that a king can enjoy. Instead, he was thinking of Krishna. So we do not have that. So now we have to undergo training. We have to undergo a process, a program by which gradually our heart's desires will change. And that comes through the help of the mind. The mind is the instrument that will make it possible. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. This Cheto Darpana Marjanam means clearing the dust on the mirror of the heart, means clearing the mind. The mind is dusty, and therefore, this dust is taking the form of being attracted to material sense objects, which are, after all, temporary. Even if you do acquire heavenly kingdom, it is temporary, but you are eternal. So it is a cause of misery. Even the best situation in this Panchala kingdom, in this material world, is temporary. So, with the help of the mind, we have to start thinking of Krishna and his lotus feet are not temporary. And they are very attractive. But it's completely different from sense objects. Krishna's lotus feet, they're not some object that you can materially enjoy. So, this is the interesting part now. What does it mean to think of Krishna's lotus feet? Yes, it means simply as it says, we can think of Krishna's lotus feet. However, there is another meaning also. Because Krishna's lotus feet are not exactly sense objects, which you can enjoy like you would enjoy money, beauty, power, prestige, these things you know what to do with them. You gratify your senses. Krishna's lotus feet, you cannot gratify your senses. So you're thinking of Krishna's lotus feet, but how is it possible? It's possible because Krishna becomes very dear to you. It's a different principle. He becomes very dear. You have an attraction for Krishna because you like Krishna. But Krishna is not an ordinary person. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Liking Him, being attracted to Him, takes away our material desires. That's the unique feature of Krishna. That just by being attracted to Him, your mind's attraction for sense objects goes away automatically, without separate endeavor. That cannot be found in any other person other than Krishna. That you become attracted to someone, their lotus feet or feet, and it has the same effect as if you were to become attracted to Krishna. It's a different effect. So this is how one is able to train to overcome one's attraction for the sense objects. Narada Muni is... See, Prachina Bari, he's actually a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. Right? He's one of the descendants. And Narada Muni was the spiritual master of Dhruva Maharaj. And the Lord had been very particularly affectionate to Dhruva Maharaj. Narada Muni wanted to see that his descendants can live up to the legacy left behind by Dhruva Maharaj. So thanks to Dhruva Maharaj, Narada Muni took some interest in King Prachina Bari. Now King Prachina Bari was trying to improve his material situation through Vedic sacrifices, which is a process, a program of going to the heavenly kingdom, enjoying heavenly pleasures. And Narada Muni had compassion for him. He thought this is a complete misuse. So now through this very intricate analogy, and now he's explaining that analogy step by step, Narada Muni is showing King Prachina Bari his mistake. That actually you could aspire. You could use your energy to go back to Godhead. Rather than just... One time Srila Prabhupada, he gave an interesting example that King Prachinabari was in. Now, I'm from England. So in England, in the old times, in the Victorian days, they have barges, long boats that would travel on the canals, man-made waterways, up and down England to transport goods. So the barges were pulled by animals and sometimes by people. A person would pull the barge along the bank. And because it's flat, once it starts moving, a man can pull the barge. Not a man, a few men will pull the ropes. Like we pull Lord Jagannath, they pull these barges. So, the man who's pulling the barge, he is making a prayer to God, to Krishna. What's his prayer? If I had money, all along this path I will put silk cushions. You see, because you're pulling the barge, his feet are, stones are biting into his feet, in the soles of his feet, as he's pulling. So he's thinking, the ideal situation would be if there were silk cushions all along this path, so my feet will not be sore. Now he doesn't understand, if he has money, he does not have to pull the barge. If you can afford silk cushions all along, you do not need to pull the barge. We are invested in trying to improve our material situation to go to heavenly planets. But that same energy allows us to go back to Godhead. You do not have to simply have silk cushions to cushion your suffering. We're suffering, but we're looking for some cushions that will make the suffering a little easy to bear. That's what Narada Muni is explaining. Don't look for a silk cushion version of your suffering. You can be free from suffering altogether. So therefore he's explaining that even when you leave this city of nine gates for another city, so long as it's in the Panchala kingdom, the kingdom where all cities enjoy sense objects, all bodies, you will be suffering with or without silk cushions. This is our situation. So this, actually the interesting thing is, King Prachinabari understood this. When Narada Muni explained it like this, King Prachinabari, the light went down. He understood. And this is what is being done through the Bhagavatam. We are being made to understand, we, today, sitting here in Krishna Balaram temple, how to utilize our energy. Don't look for a version of silk cushions. You don't have to pull the barge. One time I was in Spain, and it's kind of a bigger phenomenon now. People will go to farms just to volunteer to do some work on a farm. I think they're called woofers. Anyway, some name like that. Volunteers who offer to work on farms. So one of them came to our temple. in a Bhagavatam class, and his question was, is going back home, back to Godhead, proportionate to how much you have suffered? So it's an intelligent question, because in Christian conditioning, suffering has a very prominent role in religion, in their idea of religion. Actually, according to the Vedic system, you do not have to suffer to go back to Godhead. Without suffering, you can go. But you have to be intelligent. Sumedasa. Intelligent enough to understand that I should train myself to become attracted to Krishna. I do not have an attraction for Krishna, but I must train myself. One day, after repeated attempts, a small taste starts to come. Eventually you do become attracted. Eventually your mind does go to Krishna. And when you perfect that habit of thinking of Krishna, then even at the time of death, you think of Krishna. Antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram. Even at the time of death. And that's the perfection. King Prachinabari understood this. And he changed without suffering further. Thank you very much for your patience. Are there any questions or comments? Can somebody?
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class. So, whatever sense perception we perceive, whatever sense perception we perceive in this gross material world, through this mind, is this the mind within the world or world within the mind?
As far as we're concerned, we have no access to this world without the mind. As far as we're concerned. So, there is a world, but our perception of it is filtered through our mind. There are streets, there are trees, but the ant's world is conditioned by its mind. The monkey's world is conditioned by its mind. Likewise, our world is conditioned by our mind. The reality is somewhat different, even the material reality. So it's both. But for us, it's whatever we, our mind. Our mind is the absolute filter. So our mind is the most important for us that we have to purify. Because if it remains impure, whatever the world, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes that even if you come to Vrindavan, you will not see Vrindavan because of your mind. Is impure. There is something in between Vrindavan and us.
So does it mean that mind has its own dimension?
I'm sorry?
Does it mean that mind, it has its own dimension?
It has its own?
Dimension.
Dimension? No. See, we're conditioned to think in terms of three-dimensional space. Mind is a subtle element. It's not earth. Earth is within three dimensions. Water, fire, air, ether. Mind is not. I gave a class in England explaining that the soul, the mind and the intelligence, they have an interesting feature. They don't have three-dimensional space. They don't obey three-dimensional space. But they act within three-dimensional bodies only. Our body is three-dimensional. But you cannot in that three-dimension locate where is the mind and where is the intelligence and where is the soul. You cannot actually say, oh, it's right here, there. So, it's a subtle element.
Then, how does you perceive sense object?
Krishna gives a nice example of the chariot, the five horses, and the mind is the reins that control the horses. If you have no control on the reins, the horses run wild. So the mind, it works through your senses. See, it said here, the 11th attendant, he is the leader of the senses both in the acquisition of knowledge and in the performance of work. So it works through those gross senses. In the mind is invested three things, your desires, thinking, feeling and willing. These are the, so that's what you do through your gross senses, by the agency of the mind.
And on one point, you said that, you mentioned in your lecture that...
I'm not clear.
You mentioned in your lecture that Krishna is not a sense object, no?
Right. In the sense that he is not, just like sense objects are to gratify our senses. So Krishna doesn't gratify our senses. You know, I use things to enjoy, nice silk to wear, money to spend. I'm the enjoyer. Krishna, I'm thinking of Krishna, but he is not an object of my senses as for me to enjoy.
But when we see Krishna, it's written that the five objects of the senses, shabda, sparsha, roopa, rasa and gandha, we can, because since time immemorial we have been enjoying in this material world, so these five objects of the senses has become contaminated. But if we do deity service, then these five objects of the senses can be purified.
Yeah, because I explained that Krishna is unique. You put your senses onto him, but it has a different effect. Other things, when you put your senses to the objects, you become more entangled. Your desires for sense enjoyment increases. When you do so for Krishna, your sense desires decrease. So therefore he is different from sense objects. Even though you're employing your senses around his service, deity worship, or whatever it might be. I think we're belaboring it unnecessarily. We're going into semantics. You're not asking anything different. And I'm not saying anything different. So, are there any other questions or comments? Alright. Grantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you. Hare Krishna.